The book of Revelation, chapter 12, verse 1, And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. And she, being with child, cried, travailing in birth, and pained to be delivered. And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and 7 crowns upon his heads. And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven, and did cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child, as soon as it was born. And she brought forth a man-child, who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up unto God and to his throne. I guess I could just keep reading and reading, because it is a complete vision. Finished up the trumpets. And this chapter begins a series of visions, which are highly symbolic. But I'm not sure if I want to say symbolic. Yes, there's symbology involved. But, you know, when we talk about things that are symbolic, I guess part of me feels that some people think, well, then the whole thing can just be sort of interpreted away. That there are no literal events or literal things going on, and that's not so. You know, it talks about the beast and the dragon, like in chapter 13, it says all the world wondered after the beast. The beast is symbolic or metaphorical for something that's real, but the wonder of the world is not. So, you know, there's a conflict of metaphor and the stuff that is actually just a non-metaphor. So here we have the vision of the woman and the dragon. And we're looking, what we're doing now, I believe, is we're stepping back. We're pulling back. You know, we had the trumpets, we had all these very specific events. And now we're pulling back and really looking at all of the history of the world from a certain perspective. And I believe this is, you know, God's perspective on it. Because what is the world for? The whole creation groans. The earnest expectation of the creature waits for the manifestation of the sons of God. It means the purpose of this world is that God could bring forth his sons, that he could make lowly creatures such as ourselves. He could make beings that could be truly called the sons of the highest. That is why what we are involved in is an extremely high calling. And it is not for everyone. It is not given to everyone. But can be to anyone. And there's nothing about you or I or our history that can keep us from being part of this. We don't know the mind of God. So there's no reason we should not pursue it with all that is in us. Because if it is in us to pursue this, then it's more than likely that God put that in you. It's almost certain. And there's no point in doubting. That gets us nowhere. But this is the story of redemption. The woman. Who is this woman? I've heard suggested this is Israel. This is the church. And there's some truth in that. The 12 stars upon her head. She's crowned with 12 stars. That seems to be, you know, a very easy reference to the 12 tribes. She's clothed with the sun. She has the moon under her feet. We could probably derive some sort of symbolic meaning from that. But I'm not going to really delve into that part of the understanding here. But obviously this is a vision of glory. She's clothed with the sun. The moon is under her feet. Upon her head, a crown. 12 stars on the crown. And she is pregnant. She's travailing in birth and pained to be delivered. What is she going to deliver? Well, it says she brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. That's Christ, right? Right. But it's also more than Christ. Later on, it makes mention of the remnant of her seed. This woman is not only the mother of Christ. So some people have said it's Mary. No, it's not Mary. Though Mary, if you will, was symbolic of this woman. Because this woman is a metaphorical woman. She is the ultimate woman. She is the mother of all the redeemed. She's the mother of the Redeemer and the mother of all who are redeemed. She is the one who brings us forth, metaphorically speaking. You know, Paul said, I labor and travail until Christ be formed in you. Because, as John says, Jesus said we have to be born again, right? And how is that? Well, John talked about in 1 John chapter 3, he said, he that is born of God does not commit sin, for his seed remains in him, and he cannot sin. The seed of God enters into us. Where does that seed come from? I don't know specifically. What is it, the Holy Spirit? Was it just his will going forth into us? But whatever is implanted in us and grows up into what? It grows up into Christ, that ye may all grow up into him in all things. We are supposed to grow up into him. That is part of what it means to be a Christian. We have a seed planted in us. We are born again. Born again, not of corruptible seed, but of incorruptible. I'm referencing all these scriptures that may be familiar to you, or maybe not. Maybe if they're not, you need to study the other books of the New Testament with me. But we are born of the seed. Now, the woman, the metaphorical woman we're talking about, who sort of symbolizes this mother of that which must be born again. And I know again can also mean from above. And of course it's born from above from God. But it means in addition to our normal birth. We are born first of the flesh, fleshly, and then of the spirit. That's something sometimes gets screwed up in people's minds because of teachers that run around saying, you had some sort of pre-existence or nonsense like that. But it says in the book of Corinthians chapter 15, that was not first which is spiritual, but which is natural. The natural man comes first, and then the spiritual man. You are born naturally, and then you are born spiritually. And that birth does come from above, but it is also a rebirth, a new birth. So both terms can be equally correct. I want to put in your mind the words of Genesis chapter 3, Genesis 3:15. And I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. It shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel. The serpent was promised his ultimate subjugation. The enmity is between the serpent and the woman. Is it Eve? Is he talking about Eve? Well, in the near context, I suppose he is. But ultimately, is he really talking about... Does anyone even really think that this just refers to Eve only?